Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and I'm here with Jill Wadey of UNCW's Sociology and Criminology Department and Evan Folds of Progressive Farms and Progressive Gardens. We're talking today about how we grow food, why so many people in the area grapple with food insecurity, and what we can do to increase access to healthy food. You can ask a question of our guests today by calling 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using CoastlineHQR. And before we went to break, we were just talking about access to healthy food. There are so many components to just that discussion. There's a cost factor, and there are degrees, I imagine, too, of healthiness of food. For instance, the difference between buying a package of spinach and a package of crackers. There's a cost issue there. But when we're talking about buying healthy food, is there anything, Jill Wadey, that you can recommend right now? Is there any way that people who are educated or have creative methods can kind of get around this cost impediment? What would you suggest?
People who don't have enough money for food, what
yes.
they can do?
Yes.
Buying stuff like frozen vegetables does cost generally a little bit less than fresh vegetables, so that can be something. Going to your local farmer's market is also a good thing. We have a great program through Feast Down East that brings these fresh fruits and vegetables to some of the local Wilmington Housing Authority communities. So there's a program at Rankin Terrace, at Hillcrest, and at Solomon Towers. So that's a way for people to get access to these things at a low cost.
We have an email from Jim. He says, I like Evan's comment about foods grown for the wrong reason. The amount of energy, money, and land used to grow food for livestock is wrecking the environment. Shouldn't people who claim to be environmentalists become vegetarian to really make a positive impact on our planet? Shouldn't we grow more food for people, especially here in North Carolina? I hate getting so much food from California. Evan Folds.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Pardon me. I think it really comes back to what we were talking about in the beginning is, you know, it's a different way into the same idea. It's like, you know, you can get really caught up in demonizing Walmarts and big corporations. But, you know, the reality is that they're selling what people buy. And the reason that it ends up there at the price point that makes sense for that person is kind of a separate conversation and the more important conversation. It's the policy that delivers it there. It's you know, the Big Mac costs in, you know, 79 cents instead of $12, you know. So these things drive action. And when we get into blaming ourselves and people, it's a bit of a tough conversation for me to have because I think people got to do what they got to do. And if you can buy meat cheaper than you can get fresh vegetables, then that's unfortunately what's going to happen. So I think the bigger issue is to make sure that the people that are in a position to have influence and use their buying power to encourage these things are invited to do it. Join a community-supported agriculture program. If you are on a low income and you need life force, some living foods in your diet, sprout seeds, you know, do a sprouting or wheatgrass or something like that. But you know, again, as a society, we could make these things more collectively available. So, you know, any help that we can get doing that is helpful. And it starts with perspectives like the email was suggesting. I think that's right on. I'd stop short of saying we should all become vegetarians. I personally don't eat meat, but that's, you know, for a lot of different reasons that I really wouldn't project onto anyone else personally.
You're also a board member of the food co-op Tidal Creek. Mm. And that's something that a lot of people in this area, when they think about Tidal Creek, honestly, they think about organic, possibly more exotic, certainly more expensive foods. But Tidal Creek is going through something of a shift right now. Is that right?
They are. And, you know, I would argue with the idea that it's more expensive. I think it's on par. There are certainly things that are more expensive. But for organic food, it's not more expensive. I think what we really struggle with as a co-op is the, you know, the perspective that people hold of the co-op. And I don't necessarily think it's for the wrong reasons. And part of the transition that we're looking at is how to be more inclusive. How do we meet a WIC price point when, by the guidelines of WIC, we're not allowed to sell to anyone in that program? You know, you have to buy white eggs. You cannot buy organic food on a WIC program. Now, I think the public policy on that is that it's more expensive and you're not getting as much food value out of it. But you could also arguably, I think more effectively, that the most nutritious aspects of food aren't available to those maybe that need it most. And so I think, you know, making sense of these things is a lot different than just changing our minds. It takes a village, so to speak. But Tidal Creek is looking to position itself and potentially move down into the Midtown, downtown area in what's designated as a USDA food desert. And we've got our eyes wide open. You know, we understand the community that we're moving into, and we're asking them to invite us there.
And when I think about lower-income people, I don't think about them showing up at the door of a Tidal Creek saying, my dollars are just not going to go as far as they would at, say, Food Lion, but here I am. So how are you going to adjust the business model there?
Yeah, you have to address the perceptions to start, and then you got to follow through. So, you know, part of what Tidal Creek has chosen not to do in the past is to sell commodity-type products that might not align with the philosophy of the business.
And when you say commodity-type products, what do you mean?
Well, I would mean maybe not so much commodity as more name brand. You know, let's take Frosted Flakes. You know, we don't sell Frosted Flakes because Nabisco, I'm not even sure who makes them, but these large food companies really don't have the average person's health in mind. And that sounds like a large judgment, but when you look into actually how they grow the food, I think it kind of speaks for itself. So Tidal Creek in the past has somewhat chosen the foods that align with the philosophy they were trying to project. Unfortunately, that doesn't hit the sweet spot of the majority of people.
Right, and the members of the co-op can afford to pay a premium for making those choices.
That's right. And, you know, in all fairness, Tidal Creek could choose to maintain that business model if we were in a market that could justify it. And what they've struggled with, not only with, you know, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's moving into the neighborhood, but the fact that there's just not enough people to pull from to maintain that business model. So there's a lot of different forces there, not to mention the location that we're in is not ideal, street frontage, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's really a conscious shift from, you know, prejudging what people should eat more so. Let's get them in the door and have a conversation, I think, is an easy way to think about it. It's not that, you know, selling Frosted Flakes is a sellout. We're still going to have competitive brands that may be more nutritious or better for you. But at least we'll be able to engage people where they are and create an environment people can feel comfortable shopping in.
You're talking a little bit about outreach and education, it sounds like.
Yeah, very much so, to the point where we'll actually have offices in the building that are geared towards providing curriculum to people to coach them through healthier eating habits, cooking habits, growing habits, et cetera. That's part of the model that we're looking at still, for sure.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about food insecurity in the region, alternative methods of farming and food production. Here in the studio to answer your questions are Jill Wadey, Assistant Professor of Sociology at UNCW, and Evan Folds, President of Progressive Farms and Progressive Gardens. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using CoastlineHQR. Jill Wadey, are there education issues with the people who rely on food assistance programs, food pantries or food banks? Is education part of it, or is it really all financial in terms of the barriers to healthy food?
I mean, I think that's a really important question. What Evan was just saying about if Tidal Creek does locate somewhere downtown, having that educational component is key. A recent study from Philadelphia, they located a large grocery store in a food desert area, and 6 months after it located there, they hadn't increased the fruit and vegetable consumption of the residents in the area. It was similar to another neighborhood that didn't have the grocery store. So you can't just go in and plop down a grocery store. There's more to do than just that, right? You have to involve the local community.
Did that study, though, reveal the reasons behind why produce consumption hadn't increased? I mean, was it a financial barrier?
It was just a preliminary study. I don't know what's happened since then. Mm-hmm. I think they're trying to figure out why that's the case. But people think that the solution to food deserts is just putting in a grocery store, and that can't be the solution to everything. And we're talking about with education. Feast Down East, like I mentioned earlier, has a program, nutrition classes at Hillcrest, where they're teaching people how to cook with some of these fruits and vegetables, because if you don't know what to do with them, it's difficult. If you've never been exposed to them before, they have a community garden there, so they're growing things like kale, teaching the residents how to make kale chips. That sort of thing is really important.
Mm-hmm. Is there a time issue there, too? Because some people who rely on food stamps or other kinds of assistance have multiple jobs. They have children. And, you know, by the time they get home at the end of the day, it's all about just getting it done so they can get to bed and start over the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And often you don't think of someone in that kind of a circumstance as having the time to chop up produce and cook something and put a meal on the table. It's so much easier to go through the drive-through.
Exactly. And it's difficult. And that's why people with lower incomes, if they're trying to work multiple jobs just to survive, do have a hard time with these issues around food insecurity and obesity. So it's having the time to prepare foods, knowledge, and also there's stresses that are associated with living in these environments that you can't account for. It's just difficult all around.
What are some of those stresses that you're talking about?
Like if you're worried about your electricity getting turned off because you don't have enough money to pay for food, you know, a lot of times parents will go without so they can feed their children, right? So studies that the USDA has done measuring food insecurity, childhood food insecurity rates are always going to be lower than adults because they'll go without so their children can have some. You know, worrying about losing your job, working in these temporary employment situations, a lot of these things really come together, not having adequate access to health care.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about food insecurity in the region, alternative methods of farming and food production. Here in the studio to answer your questions are Jill Wadey, Assistant Professor of Sociology at UNCW, and Evan Folds. He's the president of Progressive Gardens and Progressive Farms. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email your question to coastline@whqr.org. Evan Folds, Consumer Reports just published an article about the dangers of pesticides on produce. And it's interesting because there's been an ongoing public debate about this. There's been some research that comes back and says it really doesn't matter that much by the time the produce gets to you. But Consumer Reports took a very strong position saying, for instance, eating one serving of green beans grown in the U.S. is 200 times riskier than eating a serving of U.S.-grown broccoli. There are some food items that are just much, much riskier, and Consumer Reports is saying these pesticides contribute to things like ovarian cancer and prostate cancer, even depression. And granted, a lot of this research has been done on farm workers who are very close to these pesticides physically. But is that something that Tidal Creek is thinking about as they consider moving into a lower income part of Wilmington?
Absolutely. I think, you know, an effort to account for that is certified organic. Unfortunately, I've seen many different studies of, you know, 60% of, you know, back up one step. Organic is not what most people imagine it to be. It's somewhat like farming. It doesn't mandate food is better for you. Now, it happens to be better for you the majority of the time. But what it really says is what's not supposed to be there, which is, in simple terms, genetically modified foods are not allowed in organic certification, and pesticides, artificial pesticides. I've seen studies on soy in California that show 60% of the samples had genetically modified genes in them that were certified organic. And I think it was like 45% of them had multiple forms of pesticides on them. And this has to do with drift and, you know, the Pandora's box. You can't put it back in once you've allowed it out.
So just to be clear, what you're saying is certified organic, in your opinion, doesn't necessarily mean that it's pesticide-free or that it's free of the things that it says it's free of.
Well, to be clear, it's better than conventional, but it cannot guarantee it. Just simply by the nature of what farming is. And not to mention a lot of the organic standards have been diluted. You know, buying an organic pizza in Walmart, I don't think was the intention of organic farming. So it has to be watered down to be able to accomplish the business model that farming has become. And that's just kind of the elephant in the room. But yeah, at the end of the day, that you know, you could spend a whole program on genetic modification, and let's assume it was a good thing, which, and to be very clear, I do not believe that it is. It's resulting in 25% more of Roundup being sprayed every single year because these crops are genetically modified to withstand these poisons so that we can then proactively go out and douse the land with it in a much more fundamental way to produce the crop, but it results in much more carcinogens in our food supply. So I think that's absolutely something Tidal Creek is focused on, to the extent where I think what you'd see from Tidal Creek that you won't see from other organizations is actually, you know, one of the efforts we're going to try to engage them on is to produce a farming model that actually meets WIC pricing. that's beyond organic but not certified so that it can be purchased by someone that's on WIC, which is completely amazing if you think about it. We have to go out and try to do that. But
what,
that's one of the things we're thinking about doing.
What do you mean produce a farming model that can meet the WIC price points? That you're talking about who would be doing the farming?
Well, our food farms program is about really searching for the value of space and really trying to train people to, you know, what's the minimum amount of land someone needs to farm in order to pay him a middle class income. If we can do, which we can, about $10,000 in an average season, worst case scenario, say 3 months, you know, if you've got 10 acres there, that's $30,000. So, you know, there's a salary in there. And so what we're searching for is a training mechanism that can attach people to space, that can follow our fertility methods, that grow the food that we've sold for them before it's grown. So the farmer just has to be a farmer. So one of the things that we could do is go out. And if you think about what, you know, what harkens back to what we started here, you know, farming's not farming. The average sharecropper pays about $75 an acre to a landowner to grow soy or corn or some kind of commodity crop. The tax value on that land's somewhere around $100. It's not even covering the nut of the space. So, you know, the landowners know this. They don't have another choice because the reality is the sharecroppers, they're going to get their subsidy whether they harvest the crop or not. I know a 10-acre plot south in Brunswick County, and they hadn't even harvested the soybeans 3 out of the last 5 years they've grown it. Yet to the subsidy, they have to follow all the pesticide applications, the fertilizations, knowing full well they're not going to get anything out of it in order to get the subsidy check. So it's become about the subsidy check rather than the foods that's being grown. And that's just a backwards method of farming. So what we're trying to do is bring greater value to that land. Rather than, you know, pay the landowner $75, we can pay him $200 an acre. And then we can go leverage the space that we need to meet the demand of the food, which is pretty much unlimited.
And this is a program that you're developing. This is Progressive Farms,
correct,
which is your company. This is separate from Tidal Creek.
It is, yeah. And it would work very closely with Tidal Creek as a strategic partner. You know, our model is not to go out and try to grow food for wholesalers and conventional food markets, but it's to identify people that would be willing to pay more, would be deemed more conducive to what we want to accomplish with the food. Rather than just growing food to try to sell it everywhere, we want to develop partners that we're growing it for. And then that model may look different depending on what the audience is.
All right. I have more questions about that, but we have a caller. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about food insecurity in the region, alternative methods of farming and food production. Here in the studio to answer your questions, Jill Wadey, Assistant Professor of Sociology at UNCW, and Evan Folds, President of Progressive Gardens and Progressive Farms. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email your question to coastline@whqr.org. Zach, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you, Zach?
I'm great, driving on Highway 40, listening to the program.
Do you have a question for our guests?
Yeah, so we keep talking about subsidies, and they seem to be kind of like a necessary evil for getting vast quantities of food out to the public at a cheap price. And during those subsidies, a cause of those subsidies seems to be the evil of why Tidal Creek won't purchase some of those products. What if there was a fundamental change in the subsidies that made, like, organic subsidies? Or would that be a bad thing could that make organic foods widely available at a cheaper price if there were subsidies for organic?
You're talking about a national public policy change, a federal governmental program, Zach, that would subsidize organics instead of some of these other crops.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
That, Evan Folds and Jill Wadey, sounds like a progressive idea, but this is something, of course, if we're talking about a national stage, we have to focus on what can be done in the local community.
Well, I think in fairness, the national stage affects what we can do in the local community. I think the point's well taken. I think if we could approach it consciously with that kind of perspective, it would change things. You can get cynical really quick here. And, you know, I try not to go down those roads as often as possible. But, you know, we have a president, and I'm not picking politically here, that gives a joint session speech in Congress and never on healthcare and never mentions food. So we have to look at the priorities from the top down, and we're doing what we can to change it locally.
Zach, thanks so much for your call. His wife also started a garden at the White House, and I think that there are statistics now to say that more people are growing gardens. Whatever your politics are, she's had an influence on the number of people growing vegetables. You're listening to Coastline. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call, 910-343-1138. We're talking about alternative methods of food production and food insecurity. This is Coastline.